I encourage you to go ahead and continue to pick up the documents at the back of the room, but to keep your voices down so that we can start our council executive board membership information session. This meeting is held in accordance with policy 5.5.2, which calls for at least one session of the ALA council to be held with the executive board prior to the regular meetings of council. Any member of the association may participate in the information session. Repeat that. Any member of the association may participate in this information session. This is an information session only, and no action will be taken. It is ALA's policy to employ a professional parliamentarian for all of its business meetings at the conferences. It is my pleasure to introduce to you Ellie Mina, ALA's parliamentarian. Also on the platform today, starting at my far left, Maureen Sullivan, ALA president-elect. Now, I have to switch to my far right, Keith Michael Fields, ALA Executive Director and Secretary to the Council. Joanne Kemp, Director of the Office of ALA Governance. Danielle Alderson, our projectionist. Over here, wave, Danielle. And Lois Ann Gregory Wood, our Council Secretariat, who's walking out of the room at the moment, or collecting trash, I think. This meeting is being captioned for the hearing impaired. Our captionist for this midwinter meeting is Kathy Cortopassi. Kathy is located over that way. Thank you. If you wish to take advantage of this service, please be seated where you can see the screens. And if I might make a note about the lighting in this room, we opted to have it well lit so you would be able to read documents, but it has made the screens a little less contrast than we would like them to be. The choice was quite a bit darker council floor, and we thought that was not the best choice. You have received the agenda, ALA Council Document Number 8, revised 1/21/12, 9:30 p.m. for this session. The agenda is also available at the Council Papers pickup station in this room at the back. I am now pleased to present my President's Report, which is ALA Council Document Number 21. I'm not going to go through this entire report. I'm just going to hit a couple of highlights. You have the written report. I'd like to say just I'm very pleased that we have a new Committee on Digital Content and Libraries Working Group. They've held their first meeting at this conference, and they will be reporting to you a little later this morning. I'm also very pleased at the work that the School Libraries Task Force has been doing. I hope you have all signed the petition, the White House petition, and if you haven't, it's very easy to do so. If you go to the registration area here in the convention center, there is a kiosk there where you can actually directly sign up and sign the petition. So I encourage you to do that. It's very, very important that we work hard to get 25,000 signatures on this petition by February 4th. So I encourage you not only to sign it, but to figure out ways that you may spread the word throughout your communities about the importance of school libraries and the opportunity to sign this petition and raise the visibility of this issue to the Obama administration. We've had a wonderful set of programs here at the conference that have started now on my Empowering Voices initiative. One yesterday, another today from 1 to 3, that are deep conversations. Yesterday's was about our transforming communities. Today's is about how we need to transform libraries and librarianship to meet these transformed communities' needs and expectations. And then my president's program at 3:30 today. I know everyone has busy schedules, but if you can come, I promise you an inspiring an informative talk with Rich Harwood of the Harwood Institute, who has done a lot of deep work in communities throughout this country. You also can see I've been quite busy. Let me actually mention my diversity initiative. My diversity initiative is around diversity in leadership, and we have had two really good events at this conference. One is creating champions for newer members to our profession, and the second, I'll be doing a fuller report on that, and the second is we're taping a series of vignettes of leaders in the association from diverse backgrounds that will turn into a series that will be available on the web and on YouTube that we expect to launch actually this spring and really feature this summer. I've been quite busy. I've had a great opportunity to travel to state associations and affiliate conferences throughout the fall, and I have a pretty full schedule already for the spring. It's one of the great opportunities that an ALA president has to do traveling and speaking and connecting with our chapters and affiliates. So I thank you for the opportunity. Those of you who have invited me to come, it's been wonderfully rewarding, and I look forward to the next 6 months of travel. I'd be happy to answer any questions anyone has on my report. Seeing no one at the microphone, we will go on to the next report. I direct your attention to Council Document Number 29, and I call upon President-elect Maureen Sullivan to present her report. Maureen.
As you can see, I'm still learning how to do this. Council Document 29 gives you the report of the major activities that I've engaged in and what I've viewed this fall as my time to learn and get ready to carry out the responsibilities of this office. I had the privilege of working with the Committee on Committees. Our colleagues in this room who helped me were Peter Hepburn, Aaron Dobbs, Sarah Kelly Johns, and Patrick Sweeney. We came up with the slate that you will be acting on for Executive Board at this meeting. They also were extremely helpful in set of appointments that I am responsible for proposing for council committees. The division presidents-elect were also extremely helpful in guiding me in the set of appointments for the committee or for the appointments to ALA committees. The initiatives are laid out in the report that you have, and you will see that I'm focusing on building upon the wonderful work that has come before me in helping ALA guide libraries and librarians and staff to strengthen the promise of libraries in their communities, whatever they may be. Leadership development, given the way my work in our field has focused, is very important to me. And you'll see that there are a couple of programs that I've begun to work on. And for me, the most important initiative will be the work looking at what we currently do that is so successful in preparing our members to be effective leaders by beginning to see what we're currently doing, identifying gaps, and then looking at what it is that we might do for the association to have the strongest, most vibrant, and effective leadership development program. You also will take note that I am seriously going to look at rethinking ALA. There have been a number of initiatives within this association, including reports that have come to you before, the Future Perfect Task Force, the Young Librarians Working Group, and others, really suggesting that it was time to stop and ask the question, how can we make this association the best that it can possibly be? What's not evident in the report is the strong commitment that I will act on to do as much to engage and involve you as well as the members of this association in the work that we will be doing during my tenure. Also, what's not obvious as you look at that report is all of the additional help and guidance that I've received. I spent time in the Washington office as well as headquarters at ALA getting to know staff and getting to understand the quality, the high quality work that is already going on. And I start my work here at this conference knowing the strength upon which this association will continue to be able to build. And it's also been a real privilege to have the kind of guidance and help from the members of the executive board, and particularly Molly Raphael, as I undertake what I see to be not only a serious set of responsibilities, but work that is requiring something I haven't experienced in some time, and that is what I call a steep learning curve. And I will just cite one area for you before I conclude, and that is to really understand the challenges of libraries in the whole area of digital content. But I'm getting great help in that effort, and I look forward to working with all of you, and particularly getting to know those of you with whom I've not had the chance to interact and get to know. Thank you very much. Oh, I also should ask, are there questions?
Are there any questions for Ms. Sullivan?
Thank you.
Hearing none, we will move on to the next report. I now refer you to ALA Council Document Number 23 and ask Keith Michael Fields, ALA Executive Director and Secretary of Council, to present his report. Keith?
Thank you. I would like to direct your attention to Council Document 23, which is the report to the Council and the Executive Board that was issued earlier this week. A couple of highlights. Molly has talked about the petition. If I can just echo that, please sign the petition. Please ask your family and friends to sign the petition. Ask other people back at your library to sign the petition. This is so critical, the opportunity to actually potentially get school libraries into the federal legislation as it moves forward is so critical. This is, if we miss this opportunity, it could be a decade before it comes again. This is really, really important. Some of these items we're going to be reporting on in great detail in other places. I would like to announce two important staff additions. And the first is that Lori Borman has been appointed as the new editor of American Libraries, and she'll be taking over from Leonard Niffel, who has done a fabulous job for a long time and hopefully building on his many contributions. And Ron Jankowski has become our new membership director, and Ron will be taking over from John Kraska, who many of you know, and again, Ron has big shoes to fill, and I think that he'll do a good job, and we do look forward to working both with Leonard and with John going forward. One of the nicest things about ALA is that nobody really ever leaves, so... and then last of all, two just notable... notable events. And first of all, as you know, last year was our first, I believe, a National Preservation Week, and that shows something of really gaining some legs. So we're looking forward to something else that will bring a national attention to one of the key roles that libraries do play. And the second is that this is the 75th award of the Caldecott Medal. Last note, I do hope that these are useful. You may notice that they're more succinct. I have asked people to begin just going to a one-paragraph format since everybody has been providing links to more detailed information for some time now. I think that makes it a little bit more manageable. I hope that any suggestions you have about sharing this more broadly. If you're going to spend the time and effort that's spent on bringing this information together, we always debate, should we continue doing something? Is this something that's worth the investment of time? I do believe that this is the only record of what's actually happening at a pretty broad level within the association on an ongoing basis, that we will certainly continue to look at ways in which we can make this more useful. I think because it reflects all of the things that are happening at a particular point, it's never going to be a short report, and I think that's a good thing. So are there any questions?
Microphone two, and please identify yourself and if you're a member or a member of council or whatever.
Elizabeth Riddler, councilor at large. Point of information, could you tell us how many have signed that petition now?
I do not have up-to-date information. I promise I will have that for you either by the end of this meeting or by the beginning of Council 1.
Because I think it's very significant for all of us.
Great, thank you.
Let me just add a piece of information that I was told yesterday, which is that anyone 13 or older can sign the petition. So there's a real opportunity, I think, for people who work, particularly school librarians, frankly, to encourage that with the students and others. So I think we have a real shot at this, but we have to really work at it and not just work at it at this conference.
Right. Thank you.
Seeing no one else at the microphone, thank you very much, Keith. At the 1987 midwinter meeting, the ALA Council voted that BARC, ALA's Budget Analysis and Review Committee, should report to Council at each ALA midwinter meeting and annual conference. I refer you to ALA Council Document Number 33 and call upon Clara Borer, Chair of BARC, to present the report. Clara?
Thank you. Well, good morning. On behalf of the Budget and Analysis Review Committee, I am pleased to provide Council with an update on the FY12 budget, as well as on BARC's activities since the annual conference. In my report, I will touch upon FY12 budget review adjustments and first quarter results, a joint membership proposal reviewed by BARC, our role in new business development, the status of Council referrals, and the ALA finance workshop. So, let's begin with budget adjustments. As is usually the case, adjustments are made to the ALA's budget between the annual conference and the fall meeting, and the FY12 budget is no exception. On the screen, you can see the FY12 total ALA revenue budget adjustments that were recommended by BARC and approved by the Executive Board at the fall meeting, which shows an overall reduction in the budgetary ceiling of about $400,000. Now, division revenues were adjusted down based on recommendations by their respective boards. Grants and awards was increased due to additional grants being secured. And the long-term investments were increased by $330,000 due to the incorporation of the recent changes in the long-term investment policy, which you may remember allows for interest to be calculated on a 5-year quarterly rolling average. And it was expected that this change in the policy would bring additional revenue to the budget. Now, the general fund revenue was also adjusted down by just under $748,000, and our next slide will show a detail of that adjustment. Budget adjustments are usually informed by the results of the previous fiscal year. Fiscal year 11 year-end results indicated that a more realistic expectation of our current year's general fund revenue was necessary. You can see on the screen how the revenue reduction in the general fund is reflected across the various categories. Note that the miscellaneous category, however, shows an increase. It's due to the additional interest revenue being gained in the general fund as a result of implementing that change in the long-term investment policy. Now, I also want to mention that senior management has also set a target of $1 million in expense reductions in the general fund in light of our FY11 results. Now, those reductions are going to be a spread across all categories. The expense reductions, however, will not require staff layoffs, and the commitment to a 2% increase for ALA staff still remains in the budget. And with the reductions, a priority has been placed on maintaining programs and services for libraries and members and continuing to move forward the strategic goals of the association. I also want to note that between the revenue reduction and the expense reduction, there will be a contingency of $250,000 undesignated to address the unforeseen. Since it's early in the fiscal year and with uncertain economic conditions, it's prudent to maintain some level of contingency. Now, let's move on to FY12 first quarter results, and that covers the period of September 1 through November 30th. Total ALA revenue at $9.7 million is less than budget. However, ALA expenses at $10.4 million is also less than budget. There is an excess of expense over revenue, which is less than the projected $1.3 million. Cash and investments are doing better than this time last year, but the endowment fund at $30.9 million is less than this time, due primarily to market performance. Now, from the perspective of the general fund, revenue is less than budget by $361,000. And, you know, part of that revenue are the dues increase. That's a key source of revenue. It's more than budget at this point in time by $27,000. Publishing, another key source of revenue in the general fund budget, is less by $226,000, and that's primarily due to the lower sales of books and ALA graphics, which are products and promotions. And in terms of general fund expenses, however, we are containing costs, and the expenses are less than budget by $393,000. So that brings us to a net revenue loss in the general fund of $1.2 million, which is right on the budget target for the first quarter. But this is a this is also a typical net asset pattern for this point in time. But I remind you, it's very early in the budget, and so BARC will be monitoring those key revenue sources as we go forward, conferences, the publishing, and the, dues. Oh, my goodness, how could I forget dues? Okay, now, so that's where we stand at this point in time, that sort of big overview of the budget. Now I'd like to move on to other BARC activities. BARC reviewed a proposal endorsed by both the Chapter Relations Committee and the Membership Committee to expand the ALA Chapter Joint Membership Program to include discounted trustee personal memberships. And since the proposal was patterned after a very successful existing program and focused on new members of both organizations, and the proposed membership fee adequately covered costs, BARC referred the proposal to the Executive Board with a recommendation for approval, and it was subsequently approved. Now moving on to our role in new business development. Now while Treasurer Jim Neal will provide details on the acquisition of Neal Schuman Publishers during his report at Council 2, which I think is on Monday, I'd like to share information with you on the role that BARC played in the process. BARC's charge is to review the budget within the context of the strategic plan, annual priorities and budget assumptions, and to review the final financial performance of the association. While the purchase of Neal Schuman was not part of the regular budget process, due to the nature of the activity and its sensitivity, BARC was still significantly involved. BARC was regularly briefed on the potential acquisition of Neal Schuman right from the beginning as part of our update and discussions on revenue enhancement and new business development. These updates and discussions occurred at all our meetings over the past 2 years. All BARC members signed a non-disclosure agreement due to the sensitive nature of the new business development. We reviewed and discussed at various points in time all the due diligence conducted and prepared by the senior staff on the acquisition, including a comprehensive multi-year business plan, an assessment of the impact on the financial position of ALA, valuation information, the strategic opportunities associated with the purchase, and the alignment with the mission and goals of ALA. After review of all the information and considerable discussion over several meetings, making sure all committee members' questions were addressed and their comments voiced, BARC unanimously voted at our fall meeting to recommend to the Finance and Audit Committee that ALA proceed with the purchase of Neal Schuman, with the proviso that those involved in the negotiations work to obtain the best financial terms possible for the associations. BARC members throughout the process approached their responsibility of reviewing this important investment for ALA and its members with great care and a critical eye. Now in terms of council referrals, at the annual conference, BARC received referrals from the five task forces that are currently on the screen. BARC's role is to improve, to provide an assessment of the financial impact on the recommendations contained in the report. At BARC's request, Executive Director Keith Michael Fields and Senior Associate Executive Director Mary Geekus prepared an analysis of nearly 100 recommendations contained in the five reports. And where possible, general cost estimates were developed for the recommendations, including the identification of those that didn't involve significant additional costs. This was particularly important, since FY11 and FY12 budgets reflect reductions in revenue and expenses across the association, and FY13 is expected to follow the same pattern. Little or no growth is projected as the recession that began in 2008 continues to affect libraries and the association. Now, based on the analysis, the following actions were taken. It was determined that the majority of the recommendations of the report on the effectiveness of ALA's counsel can be implemented without additional financial resources. Two recommendations, the preparation of white papers for the mega issue and the counsel self-assessment, still will do involve additional resources and are still being studied by senior staff. The implementation of the report on equitable access to electronic content has been identified as one of the association's priorities, closely related to transforming libraries' goal. And work is proceeding on those recommendations that can be implemented without additional resources, and that's being spearheaded by OITP. Two recommendations involving additional expenditure are moving forward: the economic model study for e-books and the employment of a part-time project coordinator located at ALA headquarters. Now, a series of common threads were identified in the remaining task force report, centering around three areas: membership, conferences, and elections. BARC reviewed the common threads along with a general range of financial impact of implementation. Senior staff is currently working with conference services, membership services, and our election services provider to identify those recommendations that can be implemented without additional costs and establish more specific costs for those that cannot. And pending the availability of additional resources, implementation will proceed on those without financial impact. Now, the last thing I'd like to touch on is the ALA Finance Workshop. Historically, BARC has sponsored an ALA finance workshop on Friday afternoon at midwinter meetings. Through the years, the format of the workshop has varied, but the goal has always been to provide financial and organizational information that would be valuable to division and township and roundtable financial representatives and member leaders as they carry out their responsibility. But with the compressed conference scheduling and inevitable conflicts, BARC has received feedback that it's becoming more difficult for members to attend this workshop. In addition, many members hold their positions for several years, but the actual information presented at our workshop remains fairly consistent from year to year. And since the information doesn't substantially change, BARC saw this as a perfect opportunity to move the workshop information to an online environment where member leaders could obtain it at their convenience and they assume their division and roundtable responsibilities. And there are four initial webcasts. They are on organizational structure, the budget cycle and process, the operating agreement, and long-term investments. These webcasts are available at the Treasurer's page of the ALA website and other locations that currently appear on the screen. Going forward, it's BARC's intent to keep these webcasts up to date and develop additional topics based on need and member feedback. I would like to thank the Association for Library Collections and Technical Services, particularly Julie Reese and Alyssa Novak, and Sheila Joy, ALA's e-learning specialist, for assisting BARC and the finance staff with the technical aspects of these webcasts. I'd also like to recognize and thank Keith Brown from ALA's finance staff for his significant contribution to this effort. I'd like to conclude my report today by thanking members of BARC for their hard work over the last 6 months. I'd also like to recognize the ALA staff members who provide invaluable support to BARC. ALA is truly fortunate to have an extremely talented finance team. On behalf of BARC members, I'd like to thank Greg Calloway, Keith Brown, Sandy Lee, and Elaine Klimek for their outstanding work and support in preparing the information necessary to carry out our work. And I'd also like to personally thank Keith Michael Fields and Mary Gikas for their insights and assistance. Thank you.
Are there any questions for Ms. Borer?
Oh, God.
Microphone number 7, please.
Thank you, Sean Reinhardt, Chapter Counselor for California Library Association. Thank you for the very thorough report. I do have one question, which I'm not sure who would answer it, maybe Mr. Fields. Earlier you mentioned a target $1 million in reductions to expenditures.
Yeah.
I would like a little bit more detail about what areas of expenditure will be reduced.
I think that it's going to be across all. Have you guys decided at what point? They had targets across all the various categories. Do you want to I think that something had, I think there was impact on the ALA Washington office across various things that perhaps hadn't been impacted before.
Yeah. Cuts were basically allocated because, Clara has indicated, we don't have year-end results until after September 1st, and generally it takes about 6 weeks to really sort out because of the complexity of ALA's finances. So the budget adjustments were made relatively quickly. I believe that the best way to do that was to give a broad departmental targets, and it basically is about a half of 1% to translate that out to a typical department. Now, on the other hand, following as it has been on a series of reductions the previous year, reductions the previous year, I think I've had 1 year since I've been here where we didn't have some sort of cost containment in place.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah, right. This time you're going to notice it. The Danishes will be smaller at breakfast. No, I mean, I'm serious. There have been some meaningful losses. We had a position at the Washington office that ultimately we did not fill. But again, that was a decision made by the Washington office in light of how best to address their priorities. There were a couple of positions that were unfunded that will not be filled throughout the association. I did send some information out. For instance, Office of Intellectual Freedom made some reductions, and part of it had to do with just the revenue coming out of the banned book week and bringing the expenditures back into line with that. I can revisit the memo that I sent out in October and would provide some follow-up counsel information to counsel because in some instances, as Clara indicated, managers were looking at where's the best place we can do this that's going to have the least impact on our priorities and services.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Microphone number 7.
Rosario Garza, counselor at large. First of all, let me commend you for developing and putting up the webcasts on the finance workshops. My question is, how are those going to be publicized to the general membership, or have they already?
You know, actually, to the general membership, they have not been. We have publicized them through listservs and ALA Connect to division leaders and roundtable leaders. I went to the roundtable coordinating assembly. I'm going to talk about it at PBA this afternoon, but I think that's a good point that we will try to get information out in general, because actually they are very good, particularly the organizational structure one. It is for every new member could benefit from watching that to get an overview, because we're such a complex organization as to how we're organized. So that's a good point. Thank you so much.
Microphone 7.
Nan Blaine Hilliard, Counselor at Large. I'm not sure if this is a Clara question or a Keith question or even a Jim Neal question, but I've been very curious, because it is about new revenue streams and avenues of business for ALA, I've been very curious to know more about Huron Street Press as you're transforming ALA publishing, and wondered if somebody could speak to, or if that's going to be addressed elsewhere at this conference. No. I can certainly wait, but it just sounds very cool, and I'd like to know more about it.
As you know, thank you for asking. We have a new head of ALA Editions. His name is J. Michael Jeffers. Michael has come to ALA with some real energy and creativity, and I think it's had a major impact on the publication program. Both in terms of the variety of titles, the variety of formats, the availability of online continuing education related to publications, and aggressive movement into e and print options for libraries. Huron Street Press falls into that category. There's a matrix that Jim and we use, which is existing services to new customers, new services to existing customers. So it's a four-point matrix. We have for many, many years been trying to look at how ALA can have a more direct interaction with and impact on the public. At your library website, I love my library, everything we've been doing with media, how do we get the message directly to the public. Huron Street Press is designed to begin making titles available to the public, and it's in a partnership with another publisher where we'll receive a portion of the proceeds. So we're thinking of things like, you know, the ALA Guide to Researching Your Family History, and it will be, all of these are library-centric and relate people back to library resources that they can use to actually undertake things that are of interest. Strong area for us tends to be in recommended reading and good books and good reads and whatever. So we think there are a lot of opportunities on this, and we're looking forward to, we've got fingers and toes crossed. It would be great to actually be able to get increased recognition for what we do.
Hearing no further questions, thank you very much, Clara. At the 1985 midwinter meeting, Council voted that the endowment trustees should be invited to report to the Council at each midwinter meeting and annual conference. I now refer you to ALA Council Document Number 16 and call upon Daniel J. Bradbury, to Chair of the Endowment Trustees, to present the report. Dan?
Thank you. Good morning. I'm going to present a brief overview of Council Document 16.1, which is the complete report from the Endowment Trustees. Before I get into that, however, I want to make sure and acknowledge my three Endowment Trustee colleagues. John Vitale, Deputy Director of Business Administration at Brooklyn Public Library. Robert Walton, CEO of Claremont University Consortium. And Jim Neal, of course, our ALA Treasurer. 2001 was a year marked by tremendous volatility. If you look at Exhibit 1, that's page 1 of the attachments in the report, you'll see some of the issues which affected the market in 2011 and will continue to do so in the future. From the Arab Spring uprisings that began in January, the Japanese tsunami and nuclear disaster in March, the never-ending European sovereign debt crisis, and the handling of the U.S. debt ceiling, and where, for the first time in history, the credit rating of U.S. government debt was downgraded from AAA to AA+. It's been a very rough year. This and much more helped define volatility during the year. How these events played out on world markets is displayed on Exhibits 3 to 5 in the report. From what appeared to be the hint of perhaps a new bull market starting the first few months of 2011, with the strongest quarter results since 1998, results rapidly deteriorated, with the third quarter of 2011 showing every world index in negative territory. By the end of 2011, there was some slight improvement for U.S. markets, with them ending mixed. The Dow Industrial Average showed a slight gain of 5.5%. The S&P 500 was flat, and the NASDAQ finished down 1.8%. World markets remained in negative territory, ranging from negative 5.6% to 21.7%. So, what happened to our endowment? As of 12/31/11, the fund stood at approximately 30.1 million, a decline of some 723,000 or 1.6% from the 3.17 million reported at the end of last year, and some 3.1 million down from May 31, 2011 close that I reported in New Orleans. The loss in the portfolio of 1.6% compares to its benchmark of a 2.6% gain for the year. As we see from Exhibit 7, with the exception of the Invesco, which is our REIT manager, most of the equity managers sustained losses, which more or less correlated to the general decline in equity markets around the world. It is significant to note on this display that the performance attributed to London Company in Exhibit 7 actually reflects the combined results of Alliance for 10 and a half months and the London Company for only 1.5 months. As outlined in the narrative of the report, the trustees replaced Alliance with the London Company as our core manager in November of 11. The performance of the fixed income managers held up much better, particularly for those managers who invested exclusively in bonds, treasuries, and corporates. Note that two of the managers invest in a hybrid of securities. London Abbott invests in fixed income securities that can be converted into equities under certain conditions. The Global Bonds Real Assets category managers invest in real assets, that is, real estate commodities. In both cases, equities and real assets suffered declines during the year. Both Neuberger Berman and PIMCO benefited from the faltering equity markets as Treasury bonds took off, particularly after the credit rating of U.S. government debt went to AA+ on August 5. While the overall performance of our managers was less than stellar in 2011 compared to their respective indices, it's critical to remember that the year-end report is only a snapshot, and where we focus our attention is on the long haul. And performance over time has been good. Exhibit 7, which actually is the second number 7 exhibit in the report, shows manager performances over a 1, 3, and 5-year periods. And over those intervals, we see how managers have helped the fund grow to the extent that it has. Exhibit 6 shows how our $30.1 million portfolio was allocated among our managers as the year ended, both by asset class and style. Exhibit 9 shows our overall asset allocation strategy, along with the minimum, maximum, target, and actual allocations to the funds. These guidelines are established by the Executive Board as part of our overall investment policy. In looking to 2012 and beyond, volatility will remain a factor as many of the issues that affected the endowment in 2011 remain unresolved. And undoubtedly, new issues will continue to challenge the investing environment. Despite these uncertainties, the trustees feel confident that the portfolio is positioned to take advantage of the current financial environment to protect the corpus and still add value to the portfolio. I want to mention just three actions that the trustees have recently taken. In addition to replacing Alliance with London Company, the trustees have recommended a 4% payout from the endowment for FY14 budgeting purposes. We have recommended the establishment of the International Relations Roundtable Endowment Fund in the amount of $25,000 so they can fund their continuing good work with that endowment. There's much greater detail in the report on that good work that they do and the intent of that endowment. And finally, the endowment trustees have recommended increasing the minimum amount to start an endowment to $50,000. Additionally, to allow those endowments under $50,000 to 5 years to determine a path they want to take and 10 years in which to reach that goal of $50,000 for the endowment. In closing, I want to thank you for your attention. And I want to thank the ALA staff, especially Greg Calloway, Elaine Klimek, and Keith Brown. Keith, especially, for all the assistance in helping the trustees fulfill our critical oversight responsibilities throughout the year. Thank you.
Are there any questions for Mr. Bradbury? Seeing no one at the microphone, thank you very much, Dan,
you.
For your work and the trustees' work. I now direct your attention to ALA Council Document Number 26 and call upon Vivian Nguyen, Chair of the Nominating Committee for the 2012 ALA election, to present the committee's report. Vivian?
Good morning. Before I talk about the report, I would like to acknowledge the members of my committee. The members were Carol Bray Cassiano, Carol Diedrichs, Allison Kaplan, Kent Oliver, Patricia Smith, Marcellus Turner, Melissa Wendt, and Shali Zhang. I would like to also acknowledge the wonderful help from Joanne Kemp, who served as the committee's staff liaison. Without her help, the committee would not have been able to do their work, for sure. I would like to also say that it was a wonderful experience to work with the group that I had on my committee, and I would like to commend them for their professionalism and their dedication. This is hard work, and it's concentrated work, and they didn't let me down at any endeavor at all. And I would particularly like to thank them for their wonderful ability to engage in civil discourse, one of the things that I think ALA is really good at. You have the report, the council document is number 26. One of the things that our committee decided early on that we were going to focus on, which has really been the case for the last few years, is to bring into our council slate as diverse a group of people as we could. We wanted to have all parts of our association representative and diversity in every way that we could. So in that, to that end, we did a great deal of personal interaction with the units, with the divisions, roundtables, and affiliates, and I think that our result was outstanding. We had wonderful interaction with the officers of those units, and you see the result with the list of council people in your document. The other thing that I think we did that was something that we felt was really important, we spent a great deal of time talking about the attributes that we felt were needed by the association in looking for the leadership in the presidential candidates. And that allowed us to really have a firm basis when we started looking at people and making our decisions. Are there any questions that anybody would like to pose?
Hearing no questions, I'm sorry. Huh? Wait a minute, sorry.
Sorry, hello.
Microphone number 7.
Suzanne Goodman, Councillor, Montana Library Association, former school librarian. So I look with interest at the numbers representing types of libraries that are represented in the candidates. And I'm curious about if the percentage of school librarians versus total slate matches the percentage of school librarians' membership within the organization.
I don't have the figures about the percentages of types of members in the association, but I can tell you that it has been a strong focus for the nominating committee for the last several years to do everything that we could do to bring up the number of school librarians that are on the slate. I believe that, I would have to look, but I think we had 9. I think the year before there were 3. So we felt that the work that we did was productive, and we felt that we had a lot of help from the youth divisions, where we were doing a lot of personal interaction, and basically saying to the divisions, you know your membership better than we do. You help us find the people who are the right ones, and they did. So that increase was significant to us.
Microphone 7.
I guess a follow-up would be then, do you sense that there's a lack of involvement on the part of school librarians, and what do we need to do to help facilitate an increase there? And maybe you're not the person for that question, but I'm wondering that.
Well, perhaps this is personal opinion, but I do feel strongly that each division or other unit, you know, does have, as part of their role, developing the leadership, encouraging people to know the role, know the importance of moving from the division level into the ALA level and serving on council. everybody has financial issues, so you could say that that's part of it. But I don't think that's the whole reason. I think it just takes a lot of concerted effort to say that it's important for our good leaders to move on and up to positions on the ALA level.
Seeing no further questions, please continue, Vivian.
The presidential candidates slated by the committee for the 2012 ALA election are Gina J. Millsap, Executive Director of the Topeka and Shawnee County Public Library in Topeka, Kansas, and Barbara K. Stripling, Assistant Professor of Practice at Syracuse University in Syracuse, New York. If these candidates are in the room, would you please stand? We have. A list of the candidates for counselor at large is reflected in the document that you have.
Are there any questions? I see people standing and I'm not sure if they're moving to the microphone. No. Okay. Thank you very much, Vivian, for your work and your committee's work on this. We extend our thanks and for a job well done.
Thank you, Molly.
ALA Bylaw Article 3, Section 3B provides that, quote, the ALA nominating committee shall also include on the official ballot other nominations filed with the executive director by petition of any 25 members of the association at least 4 months before the annual conference, provided written consent of these nominees shall have been filed with the executive director of the associations. Of the association. Petitions must be filed by February 2nd, Groundhog's Day, 2012. Keith Michael Fields will now report on any petitions received for the office of president-elect.
To date, I have not received any petitions for the office of ALA president-elect.
Mr. Fields, have you received any petitions for the office of ALA counselor-at-large?
I have, Madam President. To date, petitions with consent have been filed for the office of ALA Counselor at Large by Nicholas H. Buron, Associate Director of the Central Library at the Queensborough Public Library in Jamaica, New York, Mario M. Gonzalez, Executive Director of the Passaic, New Jersey Public Library, Marilyn Hinshaw, Consultant from Muskogee, Oklahoma, Patricia M. Hogan, Administrative Librarian at the Poplar Creek Public Library District in Steamwood, Illinois. Tony Negro, Librarian at the Universities at Shady Grove Library in Rockville, Maryland. Kimberly Ann Patton, Teen Librarian at the Kansas City Public Library in Kansas City, Missouri. Gina A. Pershini, Networking Consultant for the Idaho Commission for Libraries in Boise, Idaho. Vicki Lee Schmar, School Librarian from the Olentangy High School in Westerville, Ohio. And Courtney L. Young, Head Librarian at the Penn State Library, J. Clarence Kelly Library in McKeesport, Pennsylvania.
Thank you, Keith. Electronic balloting will begin on March 19th, 2012. Polls will close on April 27th, 2012, and we will know the results of the election on May 4th, 2012. Microphone 7. Thank you.
Tom Wilding, personal member and also a counselor. There has been some recent discussion about the guidelines about for the nominating committee on the nomination of sitting counselors whose terms are expiring and, you know, the petition process and all that. And I wondered if there is a place on the agenda for that to have some discussion beyond the discussion that was on the listserv at some point during our deliberations here, or whether what happens to that draft set of guidelines that were there. Will that come before council at some point, or is that, since it's not a policy, it's a guideline, although I think there's a fine line between those. You know, is there going to be something happening with that? And maybe I should have known the answer to that, but I don't.
I will attempt to answer your question. There's no particular place on the agenda. I would like to say, obviously, the posting of it to the council was to be open about this. It's very clear that the intent is that it's suggestions. There really wasn't any written documentation, and nominating committee chairs come in and they ask for it. It's kind of the oral tradition that we seem to use with nomination committee. So the idea was to put some things down on paper that were suggestions. These are not binding rules. They will not come to council because I think, just as your chair, I would say, and as a former nominating committee chair, giving some freedom to the nominating committee when they do their work is really important. Since these are suggestions rather than hard and fast rules and binding rules, nominating committees can use those suggestions to help them in their work, but they are simply suggestions. Microphone 7.
I would suggest, Tom Wilding again, I would suggest that there be language in that document, set of guidelines, that state what you just said,
right,
that these are only suggestions. The nominating committee is free to nominate anybody that they feel is appropriate, and have that a very explicit statement, because the way it read, it certainly didn't sound like it was inviting the nominating committee to take those liberties. It sounded like a set of guidelines, and it was pretty specific. So I would just suggest that sort of inviting language be added to the document.
And let me give part two of what I should have said in part one as well, which is that's very much our intent. We have looked at the comments that have come from council in response to that posting of the language will be modified, but it will be suggestions rather than something that in any way gives the impression that it's binding rules. So again, we appreciate the response. There's obviously difference of opinion on council. The last time this issue came up, several years ago, there was difference opinion on council at that time. And I think, as you just heard from Vivian, having the opportunity to have some flexibility for how a nominating committee works and gathers the candidates to run for office is really an important part of what we allow it to do. But by all means, it will be suggestions rather than rules. Seeing no one else at the microphone, I now call upon Keith Michael Fields for any announcements.
Thank you. Let me, first of all, talk about midwinter registration. As of January 21st, which is yesterday, the registration stood at 4,823 on-site registrants, advanced registrants, and 1,465 on-site registrants, for a grand total of 6,288. And that compares with 7,194 in the San Diego conference, and that's roughly about 500 less on-site and about 500 less advanced registrants. The exhibitor count is a total of 3,666. That's actually an increase over San Diego's 3,519. Total registration as of the end of the day yesterday stood at 9,954, and that was about 700 less than San Diego. Answer to a question asked earlier, the current number of signatures on the petition is 10,560. We need an additional 14,440 by February 4th. So please, again, sign the petition, ask others to sign the petition as well, and I will be talking about a blast to the membership that will go out as soon as we're back at the end of this week as well. I do have a couple of other announcements, and again, I invite councillors who have not yet picked up their document portfolios to please do so. They're available at the council documents pickup station. They should be used to collect and retain all council documents distributed throughout the course of this midwinter meeting. Once a document has been distributed, we won't recopy it or redistribute it in bulk if it's moved to a subsequent agenda in order to reduce our environmental impact. And only a limited number of duplicate documents will be available for those who didn't receive the original. Please, again, hang on to your documents. Please also be aware that although this room is a secure room, other meetings are being held in it. So please do not leave computers or valuables at your place or inside your portfolio. And then at the end of today's council meeting, please are asked to leave the portfolio at your place. At the end of the ALA APA council meeting, please file your portfolio in the store. Fast-breaking announcement from Lois Ann. You can leave your portfolios at your place. And that concludes. Thank you.
Thank you, Keith and Lois Ann. It's now 10:03, and the ALA Council Executive Board membership session now stands adjourned. The ALA APA Council will convene in 12. Oh, I'm sorry, an announcement.
It's a point of personal privilege and announcement. If Sarah Kelly Johns is in the room speaking of valuables, I have your camera.
thank you. And on behalf of Sarah, thank you. We'll convene in 12 minutes in this room, ALA APA Council.